Welcome back to our statewide conversation with Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. It is your opportunity to ask questions about Minnesota's response and plans during the current COVID-19 pandemic. We are here again with you. I'm Heidi Holton. I'm live from KEXC Studios on the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Thanks for tuning in today. If you didn't get a chance to send or call in your question this week, you can email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. We are teaming up with the 18 community radio stations of Ampers, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association, bringing you COVID-19 information for the state of Minnesota. Coming up, we'll have Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan taking a look at the numbers that just came out of the Minnesota Department of Health today, so reflects yesterday's cases. We went up 1,191 cases in one day, and we are continuing to watch those numbers. It is not a joke what's going on with COVID-19. Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, thank you for being back with us. It's always concerning when that number's that high in one day, isn't it?
It sure is. Thanks so much for having me, Heidi. We just need to continue to be vigilant and protecting ourselves and protecting each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we saw that it was your birthday this week. Before we get going, happy birthday. And were you able to celebrate COVID style?
Thank you for that. I was able to celebrate. I took a hike with my husband. So that was nice. It was good. It's no secret. It's certainly all over Wikipedia. But I'm 41, which is sort of an okay age, right? There's nothing. It's not 40. So right. It seems like an okay year, right? During COVID, to have a birthday.
Yes.
It's fine.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that.
Yeah. I've been there. It's a good age.
Yeah.
it was a while ago for me, but yeah, we're glad to hear you got some time with your family.
Thank you.
So we're going to be talking about COVID, but I want to talk first about the census, because there was some news today about the federal court ordering the Trump administration to abandon the last minute changes. So there'll be an additional month, but I wonder if you could explain that a little bit and then remind us of the importance of the census, because it something like the census affects how the state deals with COVID as well, doesn't it?
That's right. So I just learned also, of course, today, and this just is highlights what a census nerd I am. I probably got at least 15 text messages from people who were like, "Did you see this?" Knowing what a fan I am of the census. So a federal court has ordered the Trump administration to abandon the last-minute changes to the 2020 census schedule. So as you mentioned, Heidi, they wanted to end it a month early. And during a pandemic, that's probably not such a great idea. So the preliminary injunction that was issued yesterday by the district court judge essentially requires the Census Bureau to keep trying to tally the country's residents through October 31st. So, I'm also just reading the Justice Department is also planning to appeal, but this is a glimmer of hope in this process. And what I would say to folks is just we gotta keep hustling. This is a hopeful sign, but we should just continue to act as if we got to wrap it up, in the next few days here, because everybody needs to be counted. One really, really amazing, bright spot that I wanted to just highlight is that the Upper Sioux Indian community has 100% participation in the census. The governor talked to Chairman Jensvold yesterday. And so I think that is really exciting when so often Native people are undercounted that the Upper Sioux community is just killing it. So I just wanted to lift that up because that's just a really exciting development.
Wow.
But Heidi, as you said that, our census count has to do every 10 years, right? We do the census and it determines essentially, what kind of representation we have in Congress. Minnesota is at risk to lose a seat and representation in Washington. But it also is how we allocate resources. Essentially, about $2,800 per individual per year is based on these census numbers. So, you know, over the course of 10 years, that's almost $30,000 per individual who completes the census. And that pays for things like schools and, you know, hospitals, community centers, and all of those resources, frankly, that we've been really leaning on right now through the COVID pandemic. So just make sure you're counted. It's, you know, babies to elders. Everyone needs to be counted. And, you know, it's money on the table, but really it's just another way to ensure that the federal government sees us, counts us, and values us.
Wow, it gave me chills when you talked about the 100% for the Upper Sioux community. And maybe we should be like, whenever you hear from Secretary of State Steve Simon, he's so excited that Minnesota is always number one in voter turnout. So let's do that for the whole state. Wouldn't that be great?
Absolutely. It'd be amazing. And I think we can do it.
Yeah. Well, let's move into, I wanted to talk to you about something I saw on Facebook this week. You had a video talking with people about benefits that families can take advantage of, like SNAP. And we're in a very different world right now. Families who may have never faced this before are facing it, but it's a difficult thing to take advantage of sometimes. What advice can you give to families?
Yeah, so I appreciate you bringing that up because it's important for me to just, you know, tell my story too, that my family relied on public programs like Section 8 is how we lived in our apartment in St. Louis Park. SNAP, which back in the day we called food stamps, and as a kid with asthma, you know, I am alive today because of medical assistance. And so, you know, those programs are there to give you a little extra help when you need it. And that's just what I want to encourage Minnesotans who, you know, might be finding themselves in a place where it's more difficult to make ends meet or to put food on the table. There's a lot of folks who are in this position right now, and there's nothing to be ashamed of. These programs exist to give you some extra support, and just would encourage people to apply for them to see if you're eligible. And, you know, just helps to stretch that dollar a little bit further if you have some additional help with, you know, with food, health care. And again, would just reiterate and remind people that, you know, we put out the $100 million in housing assistance. And so if folks are having trouble paying their rent or paying their mortgage, that's available for folks too.
Yeah, families are going to have to be doing a lot of math to figure out what they can pay for. And if it comes down to, you know, your prescriptions or food, if there's help out there like that, people should definitely take advantage of it.
That's right. And, you know, these programs are accessed by folks all across the state of Minnesota. And in fact, you know, prior to COVID, about 40% of the people who accessed the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, lived in greater Minnesota. So I think, you know, this is everybody needs a little help sometimes, and you know, don't feel ashamed. This is a way to take care of yourselves and take care of your family. And we're all doing the best we can right now.
Yeah, and a lot of times you can use those SNAP benefits at the local farmers markets too, which are open still for a few more weeks around the region. So
that's right. And sometimes there's also additional market bucks that are available that can stretch that a little bit further for folks. That's something actually that I worked on when I worked for Children's Defense Fund, and now it's part of what we do every day here in the state of Minnesota.
Yeah. Well, let's get to some of the questions we heard this week. We had some about testing. The state opened up a testing site at the DEC in Duluth. That's the new saliva testing, and a listener had some questions about it. Why have a regular test place like this, and why in Duluth, and what are the plans for more sites?
Sure. So we're really excited about our first saliva testing site in Duluth. And, you know, this site is open to any Minnesotan who has reason to believe that they should be tested. Whether you have symptoms or suspect that you are exposed to someone who has COVID, this site can test you. It is open, I think it's Wednesday through Sunday, and appointment signups can be found at the Minnesota Department of Health website, but it also accepts walk-ins. IDs aren't required, but we do ask that you provide your insurance information if you're insured. State and federal funding will help to cover folks who don't have insurance, but this site is truly available, you know, and no cost to every Minnesotan. The pilot site and the reason we're doing this will give us a better feeling for the demand, traffic flow, and other factors. So we're pursuing 9 additional sites around the state, which we plan to have opened about mid-October. And we picked Duluth as our pilot because they moved really quickly to make a community space available and signed the lease. So a lot of data and community information also went into selecting these sites. We looked at places around the state that had enough density as metro sites or regional centers in greater Minnesota to ensure we have demand to keep these sites fairly busy. We also looked at areas with key populations where we feel more testing is needed that are proximate to other outbreaks or areas of concern. But I want to give a special shout out to Representative Liz Olson, who represents the city of Duluth. In the legislature, she was one of the very first people to do the saliva test, and there is a photo of her spitting into a cup that is now, you know, exists on the internet forever, and she kind of, you know, poked a little bit of fun at herself, but she said, if I can do this and this exists on the internet forever, everyone can get tested and wear a mask and take care of themselves. So, you know, this is truly just something that you know, folks should feel comfortable doing and is available to every Minnesotan if they need it.
The saliva testing is still pretty new. Is it as effective as the other tests that are out there?
I can't tell you that off the top of my head. But, you know, it certainly is reliable enough that is we are investing in it and building infrastructure to support it across the state.
Okay. Well, you know, you mentioned Representative Olson doing the testing. There was a Department of Health no barrier testing in Grand Rapids, where I live, this week. Mm-hmm. And I went to it. I decided to get a test because I thought I'd need to get used to kind of regular testing. I was very impressed by how quickly, how well organized it was. There is testing next week in Bemidji. So I did the test Wednesday. I got a text early morning today that I was negative. And it was really kind of an easy thing to do. But, you know, there are still people out there that rumors that if we test more, we shouldn't be testing more. It's not good. But what will the state learn from having all this additional testing? And how is this going to get us through this pandemic more quickly?
Well, I think, you know, what it's going to tell us is where, you know, there's additional outbreaks or needs. I think especially right now as our kids are going back to school, you know, this becomes even more important to know what's happening in the community so that we can keep our schools open and our kiddos and our teachers safe. You know, but there continues to be that, you know, that rumor, I guess, you know, that if you test more, you know, somehow that's a bad thing. That's how you get it under control. Testing and tracing. You know, I think, Heidi, if you found out, God forbid, that you are positive, then you'd be able to isolate and, you know, protect others from exposure. That's the name of the game. We need for people to have as much information as possible. And until we have a vaccine, this is testing and tracing is, you know, what we need to ensure that we have a real sense of what's happening in this state.
We are talking with Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. It's our statewide conversation on COVID-19, talking about the state's response to the pandemic. Let's talk a little bit about schools and kids. We had a number of questions come in. First, we heard from Stressed Out Mom. I think we've heard from her before. she said her kids are 8, 11, and 13, and the younger ones keep asking if they're going to be able to trick-or-treat. The older one is grumpy that she won't get to go to a party she normally goes to. How should I approach Halloween, and what should I tell my kids?
Oh, stressed out mom. I am also a stressed out mom. Like, I feel you. You know, but like a lot of things right now, birthdays and everything else included, Halloween will be different this year. There are ways to safely celebrate with your family. So wearing costumes and posting pictures online, decorating your house, watching scary movies together, but maybe not so scary that your kid crawls into bed with you in the middle of the night, or eating, you know, special treats. Our family will be celebrating socially distanced outside in my sister-in-law's backyard with three kiddos, and that's it, and we won't be going trick-or-treating. But if you choose to celebrate with others, it's really important to wear a cloth mask that covers your mouth and your nose as part of your costume. Celebrate outside where you can socially distance, and bring lots of hand sanitizer. I also have a girlfriend who I talked to yesterday. Her neighborhood, they're doing a costume parade. So they won't be doing trick-or-treating, but everyone will come out and celebrate the kids as they walk by in their costume. So it is up to each, family and community. But, as for trick-or-treating, what we know is that COVID is primarily spread through respiratory droplets, but it is possible for COVID to spread on surfaces. So if you do decide to hand out candy, consider making like goodie bags that can be passed out at a safe distance rather than individual candies in a bowl and having kids reach into the bowl. And just remember to wash your hands and wear a mask when you're making those goodie bags. But I would just encourage people, get creative, but stay safe this year. And I know that as the older one being grumpy, if she's 13, she'll perpetually be grumpy until she leaves for college. So good luck with that. That was me.
Well, the Pioneer Press reported today about some of the bigger school districts in the Twin Cities area. Moundsview and North St. Paul are a couple of them. They're inviting students back part-time, while in northern Minnesota, some schools are making some choices to go hybrid or full-on distance learning at the high school level. A listener emailed, what are you hearing from state officials about how things are going in school districts?
So, the governor and I have been spending a lot of time in districts across the state talking to leaders. And, what's most important right now, what we're hearing, it's given us hope, is the strong partnerships between the school, community, and health officials. Being in constant communication about how things are going in school, and the entire community really needs to be aware of what's happening. So if we need to dial forward or dial backwards in each individual district, folks are in the know. What we're hearing is concern around community spread and its impact on schools. And while school leaders can do everything they can to implement their safe learning plan in their school, if students or, staff aren't maintaining those practices outside of the school day, it's eventually going to come into the building. And so I think it is just really, again, really, really critical that people take responsibility for themselves but for each other in this moment. And so if there is an outbreak in a community, that is likely, going to come right into the school, and either folks have to go to hybrid or distance, or, we are truly all in this together. And, with the recent decision by the Minnesota State High School League to allow volleyball and football, it's going to be really crucial to proceed as safely as possible. My kiddo is going to her first day of hybrid learning on Monday, and we adore her teacher and her school community. We know that they're going to be doing everything that they can to keep kiddos and staff safe. But I'll be honest. I'm also nervous about it because I'm a mom. So it's just all, again, really important that we do everything we can to protect ourselves and protect each other.
I bet she's excited.
She's super excited. She's a little over being on a screen all the time and can't wait to see her new classroom. So, we'll see. But my daughter is the enforcer. If people are not wearing masks, I will hear all about it. And she is not afraid to say out loud to grown-ups, where is their mask, mommy? How come they're not wearing a mask in public spaces? So I feel like, her classroom will have their own, public health official in training.
Yeah, when we talked to Chris Erisman last week, she kind of talked about that's a lot of this we're seeing that is in schools is coming from the adults. They're either their parents or that kind of thing, that as adults, we really, if we want our kids in school, we got to pay attention to this stuff.
That's totally right. And I think kids get it. you know, the conversations that that I'm having with other with other parents is that, you know, the kids are wearing masks, they understand it, and that it really is the behavior of adults that is putting you know, our ability to send our kids to school at risk. So all these folks who are calling for the governor to, you know, open things wide, wide open, you know, the only way we can do that is if people take this seriously and wear masks and practice social distancing.
Yeah, we had another question that came in this week, and I just feel for these folks because I know when you lose someone in a time like this, the normal ritual of a funeral is something that everybody kind of needs. The Star Tribune reported this week on the funeral on September 9th in Martin County, where there was a lot of COVID transmission. Will you tell us more about that and your thoughts on what can be done and how a public official like yourself, how can you work on, you know, getting people to not gather in places like this when they need it, but it's dangerous?
I mean, Heidi, this is one of the hardest aspects of COVID-19. Weddings and funerals are meant to be events where people come together and celebrate and, you know, and also mourn. And as human beings, you know, we are social creatures who are drawn to each other during times of, you know, of hope and despair. And so I know how hard this is. And again, like, I will just reiterate, I lost my brother to COVID in March. I didn't get to say goodbye. We haven't yet had a service for him. And so, you know, this it's really, really hard. But we don't, you know, I know, I certainly know, I just celebrated my 1 year wedding anniversary with my husband. And I have to say, like, you know, I certainly wouldn't have wanted our wedding day, you know, to really be sullied by the fact that we got people sick or, you know, God forbid somebody died. And so, I don't know how to change people's hearts and minds other than just to tell them the truth. Right, that I absolutely know how hard this is, and we will be able to come together one day and have big weddings and, you know, celebrations and be able to mourn and celebrate the lives of people that we've lost in the way that you know, is fitting to that individual. But we're not there yet, and we won't be there until we have a vaccine. So just get creative. See if there's ways to do things outside. You know, we will likely be scattering my brother's ashes before winter comes, you know, up at White Earth. But, you know, that'll all be done outside, and people will be wearing masks and being socially distanced. Because, you know, I don't want any of my relatives to get COVID and to come down with something. But it's been really, really hard. Mm-hmm.
Well, you mentioned a vaccine there. We heard from Mike in Bemidji, and he was asking about the multiple vaccines that are being talked about. And once they are on the market, will there be one that the United States will use as an official vaccine, or do you know anything more about what will happen?
Yeah, so Mike, I appreciate your question. I'm going to get a little nerdy here for a second. You know, vaccines for COVID-19 are still in the preliminary stages of trials and testing. And, you know, it's clear that widespread vaccination will be critical in returning to quote-unquote normal, which, of course, means having a vaccine that is effective and trusted. And in order for a vaccine to be considered, it has to have a greater than 50% effectiveness. So, you know, vaccines will have indications as being better for certain populations and would be provided based on that. The guidance would not allow someone to, quote, like, you know, mix and match vaccines. There's going to be strict controls on receiving two doses of the same vaccine and ensuring the spacing for the second dose matches the guidelines. And, you know, once a vaccine or maybe more than one vaccine is available to the public, I would expect to see, you know, more guidance from healthcare providers and to the public on how best to keep yourself and your family safe. But You know, we are absolutely paying close attention to these developments. We are going to want to ensure that everyone, right, receives the vaccine who needs it. But I would say right now, the best thing that you can do, both to Mike and everyone else who's listening, is that while we are waiting for the COVID vaccine, it is really, really important that you get your flu vaccine. They are available now. Please get your flu shot. Our healthcare system doesn't need, right, folks both suffering from COVID and influenza simultaneously in our system. So it's a way to keep yourself sick and then, you know, cross that off the list, and once the COVID vaccine becomes available, you can get that too. But the flu vaccine is the one that everyone should be getting right now.
In the time we have left, I wonder if we can talk a little bit about the neighboring states of Minnesota. We had a few questions that came in. An emailer said, looking at the latest outbreak maps, it looks like all of our neighboring states have rising cases of COVID. What do you make of that, and are we doing something right, or is that just an example of the complexity of COVID?
You know, I think both Minnesota and Wisconsin are seeing high levels of case activity. The governor and I work really closely with Governor Evers and Lieutenant Governor Barnes in Wisconsin. You know, they are absolutely, you know, doing what they can. I think the same factors that put you at risk in Minnesota would put you at risk in Wisconsin or North Dakota or South Dakota or Iowa. You know, it's being in crowded settings, no masks, and large groups. So avoiding those things, I think, is really critical. So you should be thinking about things wherever you travel. And I would just say, you know, we are responsible for Minnesotans. And so the governor and I will continue to provide the guidance, you know, to Minnesotans that we think is appropriate to keep as many folks safe and protected as possible. You know, and that's, again, wearing a mask, social distancing, washing your hands, not hanging out in big groups of folks. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, when people come to Minnesota from neighboring states, we would just, you know, ask that they respect those guidelines here, and we'll do the same if we travel as well. But right now, we have to continue to stay vigilant, and as we are moving indoors, as it's going to get colder, this becomes even more important to not see an uptick in cases.
Yeah, and I know the Department of Health and their regular meetings with the state of Minnesota is stressing not just one of those things. We need to have all of those things that we're doing in our life with masking and people staying out of group settings and all of that. So it's not just one.
That's exactly right. And again, until we get the vaccine, those are the best tools in our toolbox to keep ourselves healthy and safe.
That is Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. We've run out of time again. We are grateful for your time today. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Heidi. Have a great weekend.
Thanks. You too. This broadcast is a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Listen to this full conversation at kexe.org. And don't forget, if you would like to ask the Lieutenant Governor a question, you can email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895 and leave a message. I'm Heidi Holton for KAXE, KBXE. Thanks for listening.